Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It is Monday. Might be. Depends on when you listen to this. It's the good thing about on-demand content. I can tell you it's whatever day of the week it is, and you're probably going, oh, shit. That's the part that I love the most. Hey, everybody, it's Thursday. And they're like, oh, my God, is it Thursday? No, it's Tuesday. Anyway, good to see you. Welcome back to the program. Joining me as always here at Cryer Media, Lachlan Cross, at Lachlan Cross on Twitter.
I have no idea what day it is anymore.
Yeah, that's the best part about being self-employed. Unless you're like in the gig economy, or unless you work as a teacher, right, or an actuary, I don't think anybody really gives a shit what day of the week it is anymore. Like, how many days of the week do you wake up and go, I'm pretty sure it's like Tuesday, pretty sure it's Wednesday? I don't know what day it is. And that's why I have a problem scheduling, as you can see, because I'm not really a scheduler.
Well, I think there's more. I think there's more to your lack of ability to schedule properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there is too.
Yeah. I mean, you can decide what that is on your own. I have a theory.
On my inability to schedule, like not knowing what time day of the week
we were talking about this with somebody, because we got Will coming up from England.
A great example of a man that I have hosed with my inability to understand what time it is.
Well, you hose me daily on timing.
Yeah, but you're always here. You don't go anywhere. I'm worried about hosing guys like Will. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce him again. Yes, I did hose him a couple of days ago, and we tried to get our stuff in a row. He's a comedian. He's a commentator. He's a presenter. He's one of my favorite followers. Favorite follows, not followers.
Yeah.
He does follow me. You'd have to ask him if I'm his favorite. I don't think I am. I think Lee Anderson or Penny Mordaunt or Rishi Sunak are some of his favorite followers. But if you need a follow in England, and if you want comedy with your political upheaval, unrest, fascism, socialism, if you want to understand what's going on the other side of the pond and you want to laugh, this guy's awesome. Please welcome to the program. He's a comedian. He's an artist, and he's a viral communicator all the way from North London, the snotty part of London. Please welcome Will Sebag Montefiore, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, lovely intro. That was very nice. I think people in London would be like, this guy's not as popular as Dean thinks he is, but I'll take it.
First of all, I'm sorry for fucking you over trying to get you on the podcast.
You hosed me? What does that mean?
Screwed you over. That's Canadian for screwed, right?
That's very typically Canadian. It's quite gentle.
Yeah, it is.
Americans like, I screwed you over. And Canadians are like,
Have you ever seen Rambo?
I hosed you. I've not seen Rambo. No, is there a hose in Rambo?
Yeah, there's a prison shower. Or what do they call it? Scene.
Yeah, where they hose them down in the shower. That's a hose. Yeah. Like you fucked someone up with a hose.
I would not have known that getting hosed was a where does that come from? Is that Bob and Doug McKenzie?
Hoser, yeah.
Hoser, maybe?
Great white. Are you familiar with Bob and Doug McKenzie, Will?
I genuinely thought they may have been friends of yours. Who are they?
They're like a sketch comedy group from SCTV.
Oh, I like that.
Do you remember SCTV? John Candy, Eugene Levy, part of the sketch comedy group. You're a sketch comedian. You understand this. Correct. You travel the world doing sketch comedy, right?
It's true. Yeah.
We're dating ourselves though with that reference, because that was an '80s thing for sure.
Bob and Doug McKenzie, and all they did was sat down and in someone's basement and drank beer and talked about Canadian stuff.
The stubbies
calling each other hosers. Hoser. It was like every Canadian trope that you could fit into a sketch comedy thing. That's what it was.
Great. I'm gonna watch it next time. I'll have so much material.
There's a bunch of YouTube clips you can find.
Send it to them.
They have a Christmas song, The 12 Days of Christmas too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that. Pretty popular here in Canada.
I love that this is really, like, I'm finding this very interesting. I imagine your Canadian viewers and listeners would be like, this is so dull. Just talking about something we all know.
And you don't know anything about it? That was the whole idea. We wanted to get you on here to talk about things you had no idea about. No,
that's sort of how I feel about politics sometimes. I'm like, I talk a big talk, but...
Do you not? So let's get into this real quick. I want to talk to you about William and Kate.
Yeah.
Okay. Big deal. William and Kate is Kate's missing. Some Thomas, some guy's dead. Everybody's running around. I'm hearing words like pegging being thrown around. We'll get into it in a second. Sorry. We'll get into it in a second. But I want to get into what it is that you do, because I was trying to explain it to Lachlan, and I'm going to play a couple of clips here. But I said, there's no one like you on social media. You're in England. We have people that do content commentary, right? Content commentary on things, politics, people. But you do content commentary on content. Does that make any sense?
Does that make any sense to me, right?
Yeah. I think what Dean's confused by is your balanced approach to the content. Because he has this inability.
Yeah, I'm very biased.
He lets his biases shine through. And a lot of us do. It's so when somebody is equally horrible to all sides, it confuses people.
Well, I'm pretty biased as well, Lachlan. I think I think that's a generous description, because I have my biases. I think they're pretty clear if you go through my stuff. But yeah, I make satirical comedy, and I come from a sketch comedy background. So I often try and find the silly thing in the news story to parody, I guess, is why it feels.
Doesn't need to be one side or the other. It could be because there's silliness in all of it.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like when the Conservative government inevitably lose this election, I'm not just going to stop. I'm not just going to be like, well, I did my job. Labour are great. You know, I'm still going to be making fun and trying to make myself the center of attention, which is the aim, you know?
Yeah. Well, it is the aim, but let's touch on that real quick. So what did you started creating these videos? I'm going to play a couple of videos here in just a second. You started creating videos, and everybody does commentary videos, comedic videos, but yours hit a little bit different. You came to light with me with the Andrew Tate stuff, but what is it that you drive at when you create content? Because, you know, you can take it two of different ways when you're doing political commentary political comedy. You can get pissed off and go, this is what's happening. Everybody pay attention. The walls are coming down, and you don't do any of that. It's almost like you poke light at the parody of the ridiculousness of the ridiculousness.
Yeah, I suppose it's trying to like look at something very serious through a silly lens. And there are loads of news stories that I just haven't covered because I don't know how to make them funny, because some of them are just too sad. But when someone does something stupid or disagreeable enough, and I do have that anger and annoyance, but I think for me, I'm always like, you have to find the funny. So I have to be able to make it funny to then justifiably talk about it.
Maybe that's it. Maybe your biases do shine through, Will, but it's your approach and your lightheartedness to it that maybe...
And there's a level of self-deprecation in it as well, because I'm very aware. I'm working on doing a show live at the moment, and a big part of that show is talking about how, like, I started doing it in just after the pandemic because, you know, there was nothing on, and I wanted to make myself more visible and more like, hey, look, I'm an actor, I do stuff. So a big part, maybe the main part of starting doing satire was to get myself out there. And yeah, I do it by like parodying stuff that I think is wrong, but also I'm like, yeah, but look at me, you know? So I think there's an interesting dichotomy there, and I don't know where that it ends up, but I'm trying to work on a show about that at the moment.
What do you mean, like trying to work on a one-man show?
Yeah, so like a load of my online stuff, like songs and parodies and stuff, but also a bit of stand-up, a bit of character, that kind of thing. So it's called Will of the People. Because I'm the will of the people.
Right? What do you represent when you do your content? That's always been difficult for me to kind of ascertain. I know where you stand. I know what your bias is. But it's like you're a relief valve for all the anger that we see in political messaging. Is that a pretty good...
We kind of need it.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I don't think that's something I can say, because I don't know how people perceive them. Because like, if I'm like, I'm a release valve, and like, that sounds like self-pleasure. I don't know what I'm doing with my release valve. But if other people take that from it, that's great. Like,
yeah,
just try to make people laugh and also make people follow me.
Yeah. But you deal with really tough subjects too. Like the you did a bit on James Cleverly in Rwanda.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No. I just went, oh, yeah. And then I had nothing else to say. But, I did do that, yeah.
Yeah, you totally did. And I've never met James Cleverly before. But what you do is you do these impersonations of these people as if they were having these ridiculous conversations, to your point. And I want to play this for you because I don't know if you're...
Hello, everybody. I know I look like one of those liberal left idiots because of the hat. And I look like I haven't eaten meat in about 16 years. But I just wanted to update you because it's very exciting news. As Rishi promised, we have got someone on the plane to Rwanda. Someone has gone. So this is great news, very exciting. It was James Cleverly. He went, came back. So yeah, someone has been sent to Rwanda. Obviously, he then came back and he was only there for a PR mission, sign a little paper. But fundamentally, we stuck to our pledge and we got someone on the plane. We are very keen to do that. And it only costs us £165,000. Now that may sound like a lot, but that's only it's under 1% of the budget of what it's cost us to do the Rwanda scheme anyway. So very cheap, if you think about it, in that way. So this is very exciting. And I'm looking forward to maybe going on a trip there myself, being one of the people on the plane. That'll be nice. I'm sure it'll be nice. Anyway, so that's great news. Lovely stuff. Stop the boats, get on the planes.
And you know what's funny is that I don't even need a ton of context to know who James Cleverly is, who Tory is. It sounds like a performative thing where a politician sent someone over to Rwanda for a performative mission. But you poke fun at the performative actions of politicians, it seems like.
Yeah, and also that, I mean, that Rwanda thing, that really does make me deeply angry, is that it's if you're not familiar with it, it's no. The idea that we are going to send asylum seekers and refugees to a safe third country. So we've made this deal with Rwanda. The UK High Court doesn't, like our own courts don't believe that Rwanda is a safe place to send people who are seeking asylum. And then, so the law, we're trying to change our own laws to make this possible. And we've spent, I think conservative estimates are like 370 million on this thing. And regardless of like the moral argument, the ethical stuff, like, fundamentally, we've spent a shitload of money to send no people there. Like, it hasn't worked. I don't think it's going to work. It shouldn't work. And it's just really sad and bleak. So James Cleverly is the Home Secretary, and he took a private jet over there to sign a deal, which I get it. Politicians have to use private jets, apparently. Fine. But just the optics of it are just like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. So that wasn't an impression of James Cleverly, because I don't really do an impression of Cleverly, but it was someone who might support him. It's adopting the voice to expose the ridiculousness, I suppose.
Well, it's an explanation that, you know, kind of leads into what it is that a lot of us do, because to survive some of the political rhetoric that we see in different countries, because Canada is just as politically fucked by cultural political parties as is the United States, and it sounds like. You know, it sounds like England has quietly led that charge of being politically fucked for a much longer period of time on the world stage.
Yeah, I don't think that's a unique situation to have a, yeah, politics being very hypocritical.
But relentless. Like in England's a little bit different. You're not from Canada, but in England, it's like, it's a war. It's a political war, isn't it? Between wills, between cultures right now. Brexit is part of that. You guys, it's England, you know, we don't get the uptake of information over there, but you suffer from the same, you know, performative politicking, socialism, people with the dog whistles of cultural Marxism and, you know, anti-Semitism, basically woke versus unwoke, and political parties trying to corner each one of those radicalized perspectives, right?
Yeah. And it's just become a polarized sort of game. Yeah. And like, there's this side and that side, and that's it. And like, I think that sort of forgets like the trans debate, even using that as a thing. It's like it negates like the real human cost of all of these like things, like talking about immigration. Like, the Tories talk about small boats, they never talk about asylum seekers or refugees. They like literally dehumanize the sentence to make it's a political point scoring thing rather than, and like looking at, I think the best thing about my country is the NHS, which is the free healthcare. And like that in itself has become like the way to fix that is to work on prevention and like to work on building the system up. But in a political term, you can't make long lasting, like sexy looking change. Mm-hmm. it's something that would have to be like done over like 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So the short-term political win is more like valuable to people. And it's just sad. I think that is, it feels like that polarization is happening across the world.
Oh, yeah. It is. Big
time.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing too about that shift, I think, at some point, I think politics may have been more productive from one side of the fence to the other side. Like there may have been some form of cooperation. And again, this was highlighted for me. I was watching an interview and it was some people that were on the Hill that work in Ottawa, which is our sort of political epicenter, Will, in Canada. Mm. And they were talking
I think the political epicenter is Toronto, actually.
Yeah, I think it is true.
Center of the universe. So
didn't mean to hose you there, sorry.
Yeah, way to go.
It's fine. Way to go. So they were talking about the change in how the parties communicate. And there was a guy that had been there, worked there a long time, said, you know, what I noticed is we used to go into the House, have our question period, have our debates, try to figure something out. And we could be on polar opposites, polar sides of whatever issue we were debating. But then at the end of the day, everybody would head over across the street to the bar and we would have a drink together.
Yeah.
It's like, that does not happen anymore. And I found it interesting because I think that's a sign of the times, and that lack of ability to work together for a common goal, even if you have opposing opinions, is, I think, the worst part of the sort of the cultural shift politically in Canada. And like something happened, and I don't know what it was, but there's been a shift where these people can't work together anymore, and they can't actually sit in the same room together anymore. And yeah, we need more voices like yours, Will, I think, to highlight the idiocy of all of it.
Right? We've
talked about this on this podcast, how important some of our voices, our comedic voices are, right? Like sometimes you'll hear Dave Chappelle say something and it makes way more sense than anything you're hearing from experts in those fields, right? Like, and Dave Chappelle, probably a horrible example, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, maybe like 7 years ago, Chappelle, maybe.
Yes, 7 years ago, Chappelle. But there are some comedic voices out there to me that are saying things and having an impact on the world that we live in.
Yeah.
And it's more meaningful, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So don't, I know you're self-deprecating, Will, but I don't think you should disregard how important what you're doing is.
Oh, thanks, man. That's really kind. And like, I think there is an element of like, I totally agree with you. I totally agree. And it's easier for me to say that about people like, there's a comedian called Nish Kumar, who I think is brilliant, who does political satire. There's Andy Zaltzman. There's Rosie Holt. There are loads of people in the UK doing satire stuff, and I think it is important. But there's also I find interesting, like someone like Bassem Youssef, who was like literally can't go back to Egypt because of his satirical voice. That's fucking satire. A guy sitting in his room in North London calling out the Tories for their hypocrisy. Totally valid. Helpful, even important, fine. But I do think there's a difference there, and I just think like, yeah, I am being self-deprecating because I'm, you know, my dad was born in Canada. I've still got that in me. But I think there's also an element of truth in like, how brave is it to take down some of these people? And sometimes it's like going after Andrew Tate. That is a bit scary because his fans are mean.
Yeah.
But like, it's not that bad. It's not that scary.
No, but and that's the thing, right? Like, I think guys like you have the ability to go out and do your comedy, and that's your comedy is your way of dealing with it. Maybe it's therapeutic, but it's therapeutic for everybody else, to Lachlan's point, right?
Yep.
It really is. It really is, because you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at political division, and you can look at the culture, identity politics, and this culture war that they're making us fight right? They're really trying to make us fight this culture war on behalf of, because they don't want us to notice the class war. And the class war was never more evident than a clip that you put on your tweet feed the other day about Lee Anderson being interviewed. And I don't know much about this politician, but Locke, like a politician in Canada would never get away with this, but we don't have reporters like this in Canada. In England, they do things differently. I want you to watch this. This is a. Can you explain who Lee Anderson is, real quick, Will?
So Lee Anderson is a guy from a place called Ashfield, which is it's up north, which yeah. And it's part of the Red Wall, which is like northern Labour voting powerhouses, so the left of centre party. And he was a Labour Party member, and then got kicked out of Labour for just being a bit of a like. I don't know why he got kicked out.
Douchebag,
a bit of a wanker.
Asshole, yeah. Wanker.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
And then he moved to the Conservative Party. Yeah. And he's got an amazing, amazing accent. And one thing I will say, I think it's very interesting that we don't have a huge diversity of accent in the UK, and accent is heavily linked to class and stuff like that. But he's got a proper Ashfield sort of like, he's like, you're right, he's got a weird, very interesting way of talking. Anyway, he was the deputy chair of the Conservative Party. He claims to speak on behalf of working people, but he also says he's out for Lee Anderson, basically. He famously got caught knocking on someone's door and chatting to them for a camera thing, but then he was caught having rung them before. Like, he's just knocking on a random constituent's door. Turns out it was a friend of his. He said that MPs shouldn't have second jobs. MPs in our country are paid about £85,000 a year. He then got a second job as a GB News presenter. GB News is our Fox News, where he's paid 150 grand for that, or 100 grand for that. So it's like, he's a real hypocrite, and he claims to represent the normal working people of the UK. But I think he represents himself and wants to just fight the culture war and make a bit of cash.
That's so odd from a politician.
I know. What a surprise. But he's using the sort of Trumpian, like, I'm one of the people.
Yeah.
Because I say whatever I want, and I say un-PC things that you'd hear in places that aren't parliament and aren't the mainstream media. But actually, he's just quite horrible and like vilifies poor people.
You're going to play the clip, right?
Yeah. I'm going to play the
clip.
But
I want to follow up.
It's an amazing clip. Like, it's not something, like, you see the contentious relationship between politicians and reporters. In England, it's like, reporters don't give a shit.
That's been going on a long time in England, though.
Yeah, let's play this clip.
Good. I like that. I like that angst.
Watch this.
Lee, how you doing?
Oh yeah, we've got a proper job yet.
Speaking of jobs, do you think it's appropriate for Tory ministers to have
a state of you?
Tory deputy chair to have a GB News job? Shouldn't you represent your constituents?
Look here, Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah, all this complaining you do about my second job.
How much you paid? How much you paid a year?
It's 100 grand a year. You know how much I've paid. It's on my rates of interest.
Right, do you think it's ridiculous that Tory politicians are
going to shut up
presenting?
And listen? Yeah, you're going to shut up and listen. Shut your mouth and listen.
Oh, so that's 40, a bit
rude, 45 grand of that goes back to the Treasury to pay, you know, to pay for things like the NHS. Right. The
you're moonlighting having your job. Do you still think people using food banks are ballot budgeting?
I never said that.
You did?
No, I didn't.
So
you haven't got the intellect or brains to understand what I said.
Why did
I said there are generations of people in this country who struggle to budget and cook, and that's true.
There's not this massive use for food banks in this country. We've got generation after generation who cannot cook properly, they can't cook a meal from scratch, they cannot budget, the challenge is there.
We've got this culture now in some of these deprived areas where people are now so dependent on food banks, it's like a weekly shop for them.
We try not to eat a lot in one day, even though most of us are really hungry. We have to be careful with our food.
We go there because we don't have a lot of money to buy food and drinks, so that place is helping us a lot.
Show me these kids that are in poverty. Bring me some. Yeah, bring me some to my office.
All right, Lee. Pleasure.
Bring some to my office.
Bring to your office.
Bring them to my office.
Okay. Is that how we have to prove people are in poverty?
Yes,
you have to
it is.
Take,
you haven't got a clue.
You have to take.
You just believe your own nonsense. Sure. What you pump out every day.
Well, I believe in objective statistics.
You're not important, Owen.
I'm not important. You seem quite angry, man, Lee.
I'm not angry.
You seem quite angry.
Not angry.
Take anger management lessons.
No. I'm quite.
Do you think it was a bit ridiculous? You interviewed Sorella Braverman, your Tory MP, interviewing a Tory Home Secretary.
I'll tell you what's ridiculous. You walking around here dressed like that. Why don't you smart yourself up?
I feel relaxed.
That's
I feel
ridiculous.
Relaxed. Anyway. You keep talking about my clothes.
Anyway, you want to come in here?
Where are you going?
I mean, like...
That's remarkable.
That is the relationship, the politicians... So first of all, you have the same assholes running your country that we have running our country. Congratulations in politics. Just people who don't give a shit about children, don't give a shit about families, don't give a shit about the cost of living, don't give a shit about affordability, turn a blind eye to it, take as much as they can, and then when they get questioned for it, they tell everybody it's your fault for being lazy. I mean, that is fucking damning.
It's really not. Yeah. I really like Owen Jones, that journalist there. I think he's really brilliant. And like, it's that's so sad. I haven't watched that since I reposted it, and it's just like, it's really, really sad.
Why are you laughing?
You know, I can't believe the relationship between the politician and the reporter there. Like that's worth unpacking.
Well, I suppose
we don't have that. We do not have that in Canada.
They don't even like you, politicians in Canada. Reporters cannot get that close to them.
Really? That's interesting. No. You get lots of like, because Owen is a freelance journalist, and so he's just interviewing him for his YouTube channel, so he's not in that interview, he's not stringently like, he's not in like the I think with like BBC and Sky News you might have to be a bit more like in proper place or something, so I think Owen's able to do that because he's doing it for his YouTube channel or whatever. But yeah,
so
it is.
So did he get clearance to do that walk with him?
I think there are places, because MPs will be walking to and from. I wasn't quite clear where that was, but he definitely ended up towards Parliament. But MPs will walk in and around public areas to get to different spots. And you can, if you have press passes and stuff like that, you can be in.
So Owen would have, but my question is, would Owen have to go to somebody, that politician's handlers, and go, here's my plan. I'm going to ask these types of questions, and I need 5 minutes.
Did he just get sabotaged?
Yeah. For an interview.
Or does he just show up and go, I'm hoping to catch this dick, and I'm going to follow him from the parking lot to whatever. So
both exist. Both exist where, like, Lee Anderson has just defected to Reform UK, which are, they were originally the Brexit party, but they've changed their name to Reform. They're like, I would say they're far right and they're racist. They would say that that's a libelous thing to say.
Oh, so so the Labour, the Reform Party in England is MAGA in the United States and Maple MAGA, or the Conservative Party of Canada up here.
Maple MAGA? That's so cute.
Yeah, we got Maple MAGA up here, isn't it?
Do they call themselves that, or is that like a colloquial term?
No, I named them that about 8 months ago, and now
I would love
viral.
If they called themselves the Maple MAGAs. That's so MAGAs. Cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you have like when he defected, so he called a press conference, and the press have a list of people he can go to, people, and ask them questions, and he ignored Beth Rigby, who's a very well-known journalist, and called her the lady journalist or the female journalist or something. And it's like, is Beth, you know each other, so in that regard they would have questions that maybe would get vetted by a team, but you can just hang out. And it happens around the Conservative Party conference. Owen always does this. He goes to the Conservative Party conference, hangs outside, and chats to people. A lot of people just ignore him, just walk past him and don't talk to him. But some people will engage and talk to him.
Like, well, the dumb people who don't know any better, like Lee Anderson, who just gave it all away in that walk. And like
Owen often gets dismissed, I think partially because he's openly gay. I think he gets dismissed. I think because he's a young man, and I think because he is he's very left wing. I think he gets dismissed a lot by those people, and they think he doesn't matter. And
clearly he does.
I think that's why they speak to him. I think
I also think that that conversation, if you dissect it, I would disagree with you, Will. I think they want that kind of, I think that Lee wants that and knows that he probably benefits from it on some level with his base.
Because his supporters are going to be like, I hate Owen Jones. That's what they're going to think off the bat. So if he gets in some little digs, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's it's sort of like a clickbaity approach to it, or like a viral.
The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by FactCheck.io. FactCheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact-check anything that you read. It doesn't matter. If it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact-check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. FactCheck.io. Back to the show. As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter. If it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, and alternative sources. And there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today. FactCheck.io. FactCheck.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, FactCheck.io.
So the Trump phenomenon in the last, politically in the last 10, maybe even longer years here in North America has been that there seems to be somewhat of a playbook.
Stay at the top of the news cycle, doesn't matter how.
And so it's funny that you kind of referenced him when you brought up that lead politician from the north. Do you see it, and is it highlighted as something that Trump, like a Trump playbook, is that a conversation in England?
I think Lee Anderson's not powerful enough. I think people do. That's a good question. I think that comparison was made more with Boris Johnson, because I think it was he played the bumbling fool and would say stupid things and would get the headlines and stuff. I think Boris, I don't know who Lee Anderson is.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
How hard is that to do?
Well. I
for
guess
Boris
so.
Johnson to be more likable than anybody else. I mean, he just,
I'm not talking
that
about his politics. I'm just talking about him as a human being.
Yeah, you sort of, there's a weird, like some of the guys, like we are the premier of this province, same thing. He's got this kind of folksy, kind of goofy little, you know, so yeah. you kind of give him a pass for some reason. And then you find out he's engaged in espionage and selling out your country and fucking you over and working with Russian oligarchs. By the way, our guy works with the same oligarchs that Boris Johnson worked with. So yeah, I find that fascinating. I find that the fact that the same playbook, to his point, maybe not in culture, but in terms of party affiliation and what those party affiliations believe and how they want to be at the top of the news cycle, even if you sound like a complete asshole who doesn't care if kids starve, is still fine.
Yeah, and he's just denying what he has literally said as well. Like,
yeah,
it's terrifying that it works. You know, like he has, when he moved to reform like 2,000 people joined the Reform UK party, which isn't like huge in the grand scheme of things. But the fact that 2,000 people, I can't believe 2,000 people will listen to this man. He's so like quickly and easily debunkable. Mm-hmm. But he says problematic things without worrying about them. Like he said that Sadiq Khan is the mayor of London. And he said that Sadiq Khan has... The reason he got kicked out of the Conservative Party was because he said that Sadiq Khan was basically in bed with Islamist terrorists and said that they've given... Sadiq Khan has given away London to his Islamist mates.
Yeah.
And he refused to apologize for it. And the Conservative Party kicked him out because it was wrong. And they said, was it Islamophobic? And they said, it was wrong. And there's an interview... I'll share it with you later. There's an interview of literally a politician being like, A news reporter cutting an interview off because he keeps saying, was it Islamophobic? And he goes, it was wrong. And it's like, there's actually a satirist who I'm hugely indebted to is Rosie Holt, who did a video where she did that before the actual video of it happening came out. It was like prophetic. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he's not a good dude, guys.
No, dude, he'll be in the same boat as Trump. Have you seen the video of him begging for $5, $10, $15? Anybody? You guys seen the Trump video of him begging for money? Came out today. You haven't seen it? Oh, no. This is like all world. I've never seen anything like this. This guy, the richest man in the world, can't pay his $500 million bond. This is him literally putting out a micro content video. I believe it was today.
$464 million. He's a little shy, apparently.
A little shy at 464. Watch it.
I am very humbly asking if you could chip in $5, $10, or even $25. I know that times could be tough, and they are tough under this horrible president that we have, Crooked Joe Biden.
he just give me $5. That's where we're at now, with the most powerful asshole in the world. He's like, someone send me like $5, $10? Lee Anderson's next, dude. That whole movement is going to be begging for money in the next 2 to 5 years, just to stay alive.
Oh, I hope so. I worry that they'll just keep being successful. Like, yeah. It's wild.
Everybody does. Can I just kind of flip topics real quick? Are you okay?
Yeah, just before you do, if anybody watching wants to send me $5, $10, or $25, feel free.
I'm okay with that too. Yeah,
great.
Two things. In England, not only is politics a mess, but you guys have an issue with the World Cup 2024 kit. This is no good. I want to get to a couple things after this. Can you explain this to me? Because this is the number one story in England this morning is the World Cup shit. Like, it's not hunger, not fascism. It's like, no. And everybody is behind this. Doesn't matter if you're Labour, Reform. You're like, hey, guys, hang on a second. Let's stop fighting. What the fuck's up with our soccer shirts?
Well, that's because there's a general election coming up, I think. And Labour are trying to appeal to the people who are just shedding off the Tory party votership because they've been so widely incompetent. Even for Conservative voters, they've been bad. And so everyone seems to be jumping on that we all hate this cross. And I can't say how profoundly I don't care. Like, it's the most laughable news story. And it would be funny if it weren't for the fact that it is distracting, like you say, from like growing inequality, the ever rising wealth gap, like the crumbling of the NHS. It's all like, but this is a culture war. It's an iconic thing. We can talk about it.
Yeah,
we can. The racists can all talk about it, and that's what I think. Like, because that's what they're doing. They're being like, I remember when Britain was great and everyone was white, and you're like, hold on, wait a minute. We were talking about a cross on a t-shirt, and you've gone so quickly to racism.
It's the same. Anything that any politician, any groups of people can grab a flag. You know, flags are a big deal right now, by the way. I mean, I don't know if they're a big deal over there too. Flags, anytime you can take a flag, twist a flag, turn a flag into a pejorative. Yeah. Is it Flag City over there as well too? Everybody's
it's big. People had there was some protests because they had some pride flags up in Waterloo Station, and people seem to really give a shit about like that pride flags and trans flags are bad and dangerous and are indoctrinating our children. Whereas the St. George's Cross that represents our identity and should be protected at all costs. I don't understand, because it's the classic thing of people calling me a snowflake and people like me a snowflake, and then being triggered by someone doing an interesting design on the cross. And don't get me wrong, I think it looks bad. I don't think it's good. I think it probably cost a load of people a load of money to come up with that design. It took them months and months and months. Because that's what graphic design is. You spend thousands and thousands of pounds, and they're like, "Ooh, this looks a bit like what you had before." Have you seen the new Pepsi logo?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
They've launched it like it's a thing. Oh, Lachlan, you have seen it because it's exactly the same.
Same one.
Okay.
It's just a little bit more modern. So I'm like, it doesn't. But the idea that this is like an attack on our English identity, is laughable.
But that's what they do, isn't it, Will? That's what they do. They turn everything into an attack on our identity. And then because they can use that attack on any identity, point to a group and say it's them that's doing it. But in the case of a St. George's cross on the back of a jersey, I mean, that's red meat for every idiot. And you know what has amazed me, too? I don't know if it's amazed you. Like, I always gave Canadians and Canada credit for being smart enough to see through this stuff. I'm sad that we're this dumb that we keep falling for this shit. Aren't you?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. And the problem is as well, and we'll get to this with the Kate thing, is that the more you talk about it, the more you feed it.
Yeah.
And like, I've just did a video before we came on about this Nike England flag thing. And I'm like, I do think sometimes about that of like, if we all just didn't click on it, it's like in the Hunger Games. If nobody watched the Hunger Games wouldn't happen. Yeah. If nobody clicked on these things,
they wouldn't be things.
They wouldn't be things. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's an interesting one of like even talking about it and I'm being like, it's stupid. I'm trying to dismiss it. I still find it fun to talk about. So it's a really interesting, like, how do you pass that? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I had a similar kind of moment where I like, cause I'll get drawn into the anger as well. Like,
yeah, of like, course.
I remember when they announced they were redoing Roadhouse. Did you ever watch the original Roadhouse, Will?
Oh, no, but I listened to a podcast where they talked extensively about it. Yes. Patrick Swayze, it's quite homoerotic.
Yeah. A lot of guys with shirts off wrestling. Yeah, big time. Yeah.
So, anyway, when someone said they were redoing the Roadhouse and I started to look into, you know, see some stuff online, I was like genuinely upset that they would remake that movie. And then I had a moment where I was like,
"What? Because it was a masterpiece? Because it was like an Oscar winner?
Exactly.
Fucking Roadhouse, dude!" Like,
but I was that guy on my radio show going, "Can't believe they're redoing this." And then I had a couple of people point out that, "Hey, Locke, you're defending Roadhouse.
It's like one of the worst movies of all time. I can't believe
it's not. It's a great movie." That's take awful. That back.
It's awful. But
so we do get sucked into it, and every once in a while, if you are self-aware, you can take a look back at your own sort of position on it and go, okay, I'm gonna stop being angry about Roadhouse being redone.
I don't think we should talk about Kate Middleton. I think we should just watch Roadhouse.
No, I think we should talk about Kate Middleton. Where is she, Will? Have you found her?
I don't care.
Thank you. Oh, that's refreshing.
Oh my God.
Okay, so tell me, are you guys super sick of it? Because like over here it barely registers, and then all of a sudden 2 weeks ago, you know, Thomas Kingston dies, blunt force trauma to the head, and then everybody's doing these videos about Kate abortion this, and I'm like, okay, I'm back into the royal mess. But nobody over there seems to give as much as a shit as they do over here.
No, people definitely do. I think like I'm often, it's like when the Queen died, I was very surprised at the amount of people on Instagram that was like, they posted a thing saying, "Thank you for your service, mom." I was like, what are you talking about? Is it, like, it's sad an old lady died, but come on. But I think if you walked into a pub in anywhere in England and you started up a conversation with some strangers, I reckon 75% of people would be well up for talking about this.
Really?
At least.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it is fascinating. That's the problem with it, is that it is interesting.
So where is she?
And there's one little tidbit that I heard on, there's the Private Eye podcast. There's a satirical, investigative journalist magazine called Private Eye. It's a great magazine. They have a podcast called Page 94, which is the extra page of the thing every 2 weeks. They were talking about how, so Kate, the royal family announced in like December that she would be taking 3 months off of public duties. So this was a planned break the whole time.
Yeah.
Mm. But then social media just started getting a bit crazy. and being like, where is she? And no one thought to look at like, oh, they announced that she was going quiet for a while for whatever reason. And so then this thing built up, and then she posted the Mother's Day picture, which had clearly been edited. And then people were like, well, it's clearly something crazy. And I'm like, I get it why we're all fascinated. I'm fascinated too. But why aren't we still talking about the fact that Prince Andrew paid a woman £12 million to settle out of court a sexual harassment case?
For an underager.
Yeah, that seemed like there are real scandals and real corruption in the world. I think Kate, I just don't care what Kate's doing. But also, I do care. This is the problem.
Right, dude, and that's the thing, is that I don't care either. I come from England. I was born there. My parents were really sad when the missus passed away last year. My mom and dad were apoplectic. My mom was in a funk for like 2 weeks. She's never talked about the royals before that, hasn't talked about them since. And you're like, why do you take this so personally? She goes, I don't know. I just grew up with it. But it's just this institution that we all accepted, right, as kids. And because of Princess Di and Charles, and, you know, there may have been some philandering there, something to do with the tunnel. Everybody's all upset about that still. There's so much heat around this royal family. And then Harry leaving and all this. By the way, he's laughing at this whole thing. He's like, that's why we left. But it was fascinating to see everybody pontificate as to where she was, and people were putting up videos like they were sure that her disappearance was attached to the death of a different royal, and it's going to come out sooner or later that Prince William's into pegging or something like that.
Oh, that's been out for a while.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You actually introduced me to that, and then I spoke to a friend of a friend who like has a friend who works at a newspaper who was like, oh, yeah, that's common knowledge. I was like, how is it common knowledge? Like, how does a rumor like that start? Because a rumor about extramarital affairs,
yes,
fine. That's one thing.
But, like, a specific kink is like, also, who cares if he likes pegging? That's fine. Like,
I know. That's fine. Yeah, I know. But then, you know, and then
maybe someone saw it in his duffel bag at the gym.
Maybe they saw he had a Firefox browser and were like, oh, we know what that guy's doing. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what. I think it's always like, I just don't know, Dean. I just don't know.
You don't
What do you think? What do you have a theory on it? What's happening
on Kate? On
the pegging?
On the pegging? Yeah.
Yeah. Does it work?
Well.
Yeah. Two people come together and they love each other so much.
So great. Much.
With an apparatus.
Is it like hosing? Is it different to hosing?
You can call it that after the fact. Yeah, it depends on how hard you go. But listen, it's weird. It's weird because
is pegging a common British term, Will? Or is that is that a North American thing?
No, I feel like it came into parlance like in the past 5-10 years, but then I'm not big on the kink scene despite my Firefox browser. So it may have been in the mainstream, it's not been spoken about up to the past 10 years, I'd say.
Well, I only heard about pegging because I remember it was a year and a half ago. All of a sudden, Prince of Pegging was like the number one trend in
Prince
the world.
It was trending.
Yeah, Prince of Pegging started to trend. And I sent Lachlan a note. I'm like, what's the deal with this Prince of Pegging thing? He goes, oh, you got to read about William. And I'm like, so who cares if he's into pegging? Like, I don't understand the big deal. Like, if he's that's just what he prefers, if that's something that he likes. And he goes, no, it's the royal family. It's a big deal because it's them. And everybody wants to sewer every single one of them.
Here's the thing, though, Dean. Like, if you made some sort of an announcement on this podcast, people would have a heyday. Like, if you said, I'm into this thing, right? Yeah. Whatever it is, being dressed up as a baby and, you know, fed a bottle or something.
Change.
Like, I think that would definitely have some legs. And you're not a member of the royal family. And if you told me that, I would probably find a way of bringing it up on every podcast until I died. So I get it from that perspective.
Yeah.
Like, listen, Prince William, if he's into it, fine. I don't care what he does in his bedroom, but that's not taking away from how funny that is.
It's a pretty funny narrative. I mean, you know.
There's just so much to it. Like, Will, my thing was, let's say that got back to the Queen before she died.
She wanted to know what it was all about.
And she was like, so what's this pegging thing?
We don't know. That's not how she died, you know? We don't know. I think the beautiful thing is that there will be people in the world who have never even thought or even heard of the concept of pegging. And then they heard about it because of these rumors. And then they tried it and they found their kink.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really, say what you want about the royal family.
Yeah.
But I think he inadvertently has done a lot for the kink community.
Yes, you're right. Although we do need to say this out loud.
It's like finding out someone else is into something else that you're into, which you don't want other people to know, and it sort of makes it okay. Right? Yeah. Same thing.
Or you've just never heard about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, you love the royal family. You're like, I don't know about any of that. And then Google searches of pegging went up after all of this stuff.
Well, for sure.
I just think it's hilarious.
Because of this podcast, it's probably going up a little bit too.
I didn't even know what it was. I no word of a lie until it started to trend and ask.
I knew what it was because there was apparently somebody that was in the broadcast industry in Edmonton. This was years ago. And I was at a party one time and somebody said to me, "Hey, you know, so-and-so over there, he apparently is into pegging." And I was like, "You're going to need to explain that to me." And there, so I got a graphic description in a garage with a guy who had just smoked a joint about what pegging was. And so
I think that guy was into pegging and was testing the waters. Well,
there was a hockey player in town and everyone,
as one does. It's one of those ones where you're like, "Hey, has anybody else ever heard of this weird thing called pegging?" And you float it in a group of people and you see one guy go, "Oh, I have. It's not bad." And you're like, "Okay, you're my guy."
Yeah.
There was a hockey player that apparently, and this was a rumor in town, that used to go to the bars and he would take a young lady home, an interested
party
female, and in order to get excited before the deed, he would make them sit down and watch My Little Pony. And we never really got to the bottom of where that rumor started from.
I did not expect you to say, if you had given me 20 years to work out how you're going to end that sentence, My Little Pony would have been bottom of the list.
So, Will, I hear this story and I'm like, who makes that up? And so then I've been talking about it for years and Dean hates it when I bring it up because he knows the hockey player and everything like this. It's just not true. But the thing is, it's so bloody specific that I don't know if I would have the creativity to make that up about somebody. So, and then not only that, this is actually a thing. There is a group of people out there and there's a nickname for them. I can't remember what the nickname is.
Bronies.
Bronies.
Yeah.
It's a
thing.
And so now I'm like, okay, well, maybe he did need to watch My Little Pony to get his rocks off.
Fuck me, lads. Sorry, completely changed the subject.
Yeah.
But the news has just broken that Kate Middleton has cancer.
No.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
This is wow. Great. This really vindicates my "who gives a fuck, shut up."
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So she's been undergoing cancer treatment and they just admitted that she has cancer. Did they say what kind of cancer she has?
No, I guess this was planned. There was planned surgery. So I don't know if it would have been, imagine it would have been stomach cancer or something, or some organ, abdominal area. I don't know. It's all speculation now, but it is interesting that everyone, like, quite gleefully, including us, we talked about it, gleefully start talking and speculating, and then something incredibly human happens and you go, shit.
That's a really hard pivot from My Pony, My Little Pony.
That has never, I would say, My Little Pony kink and a cancer diagnosis have never been spoken about in the same sentence.
It's a real tough turn there, Will. Thank
you. Yeah.
Like, and we just did it. We just negotiated those waters quite. Yeah, I feel awful for Kate, and hopefully she can get through this.
Well, it proves a point. Like, you know, we joked around about it because it was just so salacious. Like, when we were talking about it, there were no assertions that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, these are the rumors that are going around, and the British press is relentless. Like, that's the way that we talked about it. So when I asked you to come on the show today, I wanted you to talk about that which you have. And in a moment, breaking news in the middle of the podcast.
That's pretty amazing, actually.
A pretty fucking human moment, as you point out, where, hey, guys, Kate had, you know, for all the things that you've said about him, her, for all the things you've said about the family that we've all joked around about, that we've all entertained, the princess is a woman who has cancer, and she's been trying to deal with it for the past 3 months.
I'd imagine trying to deal. And I know they're the royal family. They have shitloads of money. You'd have to feel that sorry for them. But, like, it is a strange lifestyle. And imagine trying to deal with that whilst everyone's like, Where is Kate?
Can you answer a question for me, Will?
I'll answer it before you ask it. My Little Pony, pegging, and then a cornetto.
Okay, no. Why would they not just come out and say Kate is battling cancer? Like, I don't understand. Listen, I understand that everyone has a right to their privacy, and everyone has a right to their medical privacy. But if you're the press, you know, responsible for controlling the press of the royal family, I don't understand why somebody wouldn't have said in January or December, said, listen, Kate needs to go away. She is dealing with a medical situation, and it would have just alleviated all that. No?
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that. I don't know if it's like, I don't know at what stage she was in a diagnosis.
December. Yeah.
Like, maybe she just wasn't ill. Okay, I've just looked at the video. So in January, she had major abdominal surgery. And it was non-cancerous. But then after she was recovering, it said it could be cancerous. So then she started undergoing treatment.
Okay.
So I guess you have to be on top of, like, exactly what's happening. Yeah, because as we know, if the public get a tiny little shred of anything, we'll be like, well, I guess they're injecting, I don't know, adrenochrome into a tummy. That's what's happening. Like, we'll make.
Well, I mean, we have the pegging story, right? Like, anything that we can make it, any way we can make it more salacious, and you know, away we go. We're off, you know, off down the garden path, and we're all guilty of it in this business. Yeah.
What a moment! I mean, just in this podcast to have, you know, we're sitting here banding around, we're trying to do content. All of a sudden, we find out Kate has cancer, right? And not knowing why. I'm just waiting for it to upload a video of Kate actually talking about it here. We'll play it for you too, Will, so you can have a look at it. Yeah, it's very interesting. And again, human moment. You don't know what someone's dealing with until that person comes out and says, here's what I'm dealing with. And everybody likes to have fun at everybody else's expenses. We're no different. But this is Princess Kate talking about her diagnosis. She just released this. Let's watch it together. I haven't seen it.
I wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you personally for all the wonderful messages of support and for your understanding whilst I've been recovering from surgery. It has been an incredibly tough couple of months for our entire family, but I've had a fantastic medical team who have taken great care of me, for which I'm so grateful. In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. This, of course, came as a huge shock, and William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family. As you can imagine, this has taken time. It has taken me time to recover from major surgery in order to start my treatment. But most importantly, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them, and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay. As I've said to them, I am well and getting stronger every day by focusing on the things that will help me heal in my mind, body and spirit. Having William by my side is a great source of comfort and reassurance too. as is the love, support and kindness that has been shown by so many of you. It means so much to us both. We hope that you'll understand that as a family, we now need some time, space and privacy while I complete my treatment. My work has always brought me a deep sense of joy, and I look forward to being back when I'm able. But for now, I must focus on making a full recovery. At this time, I'm also thinking of all those whose lives have been affected by cancer. For everyone facing this disease, in whatever form, please do not lose faith or hope. You are not alone.
There you go. Note from Kensington Palace. Will, you're the most entitled person to speak to that. Your thoughts?
I'm very entitled. Yeah, incredibly entitled. I was just sad. That's just like, it's cancer's a fucking shit disease. And
yeah,
it just makes you... It's just funny. It says a funny thing. I think she did it. Like, that's a really beautiful and like hard.
Well, you're emotional. Hey, Will? Made you emotional.
Like, that's just my dad's a clinical oncologist, and like that, it just sucks. Like, it's just a horrible thing to happen to anyone. And like, it's just an interesting way that we respond to the news and the media cycle. That is like, just glancing at Twitter there, there was all this like, whoa, where's Kate? Pegging, whoa! And it's like, wow, okay, human thing. Sorry, whoops, step back. Wow, it's just an interesting... It's like when Boris Johnson got COVID. Everyone was like, fuck this guy. And they was like, oh, he might die. He's in intensive care. And like...
Yeah, he got it. He got really sick, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know, guys,
it makes it real.
I feel bad. You know what? I'll tell you what. Part of me feels, you know, obviously... there's nothing more important than the protection of human life, right? And the dignity of human life. And I really do believe that. It doesn't matter whose life that is, right? And, you know, on all weighted scale, sure, the royals, you pointed out, they've got all the money and influence and entitlement in the world.
Best healthcare.
And everybody was like, oh, it's no different. You know, I get that's a human being that has to deal, she pointed out, has to deal with her children, has to explain that to her kids. Guaranteed she loves her children. She's married to a dude who literally for the past 3 weeks has been conducting his royal duties with people with cameras in his face, mocking him, calling him the Prince of Pegging. We can joke around about it, but they chase him around. Her medical records were broken into at the hospital she was into. Everybody was trying to figure out what was going on. I mean, that's a very, very, very different experience for her than it is for anybody else that gets diagnosed with cancer, is it not?
Yeah, totally. And I really like at the end that she said, you know, she spoke about other people, like regular people having it. I think that was a really nice touch. Mm-hmm. And like, this is funny because I obviously am a Republican. I'm not a fan of the royal family at all. I think they shouldn't exist. I don't like it. But you inject any sort of human element into something, you're like, yep, that's
awful. Don't I feel like the F and A hole now? That's literally all three of us probably in the middle of this podcast.
Yeah, but I was I think that's the one that was talking about bronies.
Yeah, that's true. What were you saying, Will? You think that's
I think that's very indicative. I think that's how most people have responded to this. Is like you get caught up in a media storm. And it does, like, the humanity gets removed from it. It's like when I make any of my satirical videos, right? I'm making fun of Lee Anderson. And, like, I try not to mock things that people can't control. I don't like making fun of the way people look. Don't like making fun of, like if they have, like, making fun of Lee's accent, for example, I think is hacked.
Things they can't change, lazy. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, like, I am making fun of him. I am, I don't really want him to see it. Like, I do feel like if I was in a room with him, I'd be like, I disagree with him so vehemently. And I think he's like a force for bad in the world. But I'm still like, he is a human. It's a weird area.
You know what?
I'm able to separate that.
Yeah, he's good at it. The hard part.
It's impressive. I find that difficult. I find it difficult.
I do too.
You know what, though? For me, one of my best friends is a little person. And he taught me a lot about humility, and because he has more of it than most people on the planet, and he might even have the lion's share of it, if I'm being honest. So over my time of knowing him and doing a radio show with him and seeing how he negotiated life being 4 feet tall, right? And how he dealt with our reaction to the things that he did taught me a lot about, honestly, I remember somebody who was new to the relationship between myself and James made a comment about me making fun of him for his love for, I don't know, nerds or like nerd stuff or something.
Star Wars.
And the guy, Star Wars. And the guy said to me, he goes, "Would you make fun of me?" And I looked at him and I went, "Yeah, I totally would." So I like, I think there's a point where we all like taking a step back from this royal family thing. And I don't feel bad about making fun of Prince William being into pegging because his wife has got cancer. I can separate that. I understand how people might have a problem with it, but I,
do you want to do a type five now? There we go.
Do a type five.
I can live with myself. I can remove Kate has cancer. I can still have empathy for that and what she's going through, but I can still laugh at the joke and still be okay if somebody pipes up in a bar tomorrow about someone else's kink in the royal family, right?
Yeah.
Am I alone? You guys are making me feel very alone here.
I think you might be, actually. Yeah, yeah. Is he alone, Will? Hands up if he's alone. Yeah, yeah, you're alone.
Yeah, I think of course you could separate it. I think it's just an interesting, like, it's just a very interesting thing that happens of like humanity getting plunked on the top of what is just like a speculative, like, oh, weird, fun, interesting thing. And then, like, you know, everybody has someone that they know who had or has cancer. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a triggering sort of thing for people. And it's like, so it's not just even the relationship to that, it's the relationship to the thing itself. It's just like I think there's still ways of making jokes about anything. I think you can joke about anything, but it's just an interesting, like, oh, that's not where we expected the podcast to go.
Ricky Gervais, actually, one of your countrymen, is probably the best at it of anybody I have ever heard in front of a mic. Being able to negotiate tougher conversations with speaking of voices that we need in the world, Ricky is definitely one of them for sure.
Well, that's I disagree more hard than I could have known. Ricky Gervais, are you sure you're thinking of the right guy? Ricky Gervais, the atheist, the guy who keeps telling everyone he's an atheist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did you know he's an atheist?
I like him.
Yeah, he loves Ricky Gervais. I like Ricky Gervais too. He's thought provoking. Do I agree?
Yeah, the thought is, oh, I'll turn this off. Yeah. He votes a lot of thought.
Is he not loved over there?
He's like, popular.
Yeah.
He is popular. Like, he has Netflix specials and stuff, but I don't think he's very nice.
He's not a nice person?
No.
I don't know. Never met him. Walked past him in a park once, but he likes to drag trans people through the mud, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely has. He does do that, doesn't he? The thing for me with watching him is that, like I said, I've always appreciated guys that can go into hard areas, right? And come out the other side with some semblance of a point. I always thought Ricky was good at that. And you know what? Listen,
the problem is when he goes into that tough area, he fucks everything up and leaves it in a wreck and then gets out and he's fine. And he's like, look at that area. Look what I did.
Yeah, look what I did. I blew that up. Yeah.
Yeah, he sort of has that attitude, right? He sort of had that ability, and he always has, to say, hey, I'm going to still say this stuff, even though you don't like it. And his last special was tough. There were some tough parts in there.
There's
like
some hard moments. Moment
where he was talking about, you know, Chinese people eating dogs, going hard on, like, I mean, some of that stuff was like, you know, and we can say that we're used to it because we're from a certain time where those tropes and those stereotypes were funny, and you were allowed to do that. But to your point, you know, I was left after the last Gervais special going, he didn't need to do probably 3/4 of the stuff that he did.
Yeah.
And he just did it because he's one of the guys that can. And I think he gets off on that. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And like, there's a space for that sort of comedy. Like, it's totally fine. I just like, I think he thinks he's punk, and I think he's the establishment. I think that's why he winds me up. Is I think he thinks like he's this free thinking guy who can like change things. But
that's interesting.
The punk is like the trans person going to an all male comedy club and doing a set. Like, that's way harder than being a millionaire talking about Chinese people. Like, I think it doesn't feel innovative to me. And like, you can't deny that he's innovated and made some incredible comedy over the years. Like, it's silly to say he's not funny. Like, he's a funny guy. But I find him, what he represents, I find a bit annoying.
Selfish. You know? I find some of his stuff becoming very selfish. You know what I mean? Very like, I'm also gonna do anyone, this comedy because I can.
Like, anyone can like anything. Like, yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But
like, I like you.
It, yeah, yeah. And I'm terrible.
Will Sebag Montefiore. Follow him on Twitter at WSEBAG.
It's good to see you.
That's it.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, you too, guys.
I know you're going to have to go back and start reading, and you're going to have to, you know, dig into the Kate thing. But honestly, thank you for spending some time with us, and having that moment on this podcast was actually pretty wild.
Eh? What a moment. Breaking news. I've never done a breaking news before.
Oh, you have to come back and give us breaking news from England for the next couple of years.
Yeah, God. Where, is it? I don't know. It's never going to top that.
No. That was good.
Because we waited to speak about Kate up until that moment, and then it's wild.
Yeah,
wow,
crazy. Isn't it?
Yeah, no, thanks. It's always a pleasure.
I was really hoping to get into a long conversation about bronies, but
yeah,
next time.
Yeah. Thanks, Will. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
Take care, buddy. Will Sebag Montefiore. It's sad stuff, eh? Right there. Kind of wanted to put up this picture for him to see what he thought. Now I don't think I will. That's tough. That's a tough one.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
But again, like, I don't know. I think you can overthink this a little bit, right?
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah, dude. I think everybody overthinks it. Like, hey, listen, everybody gets cancer. Kate Middleton has cancer. We all joked around about it because it's just salacious and weird. But in a human moment, cancer is a pretty shitty thing, right? And then I think back to all the jokes that people were making about her and William, and jokes are jokes. Hey, listen, I love a good joke like everybody else. But, you know, in terms of that moment, it's amazing. It's pretty humbling, eh? When you're doing content and you're doing the stuff we do and you find out that woman has cancer, it immediately teleports you into this asshole avatar where you're like, oh, I am a dick. And then you have to go back and think, maybe we should stop all the jokes. Same thing with Mulrooney. Like, Mulrooney died a couple of weeks ago. Remember that? I'm on a podcast with a couple of guys today, and they were talking about Mulrooney and talking about when it's okay to talk about how he was one of the worst prime ministers in the history of this country. And it's like, and literally one of the guys was like, give it another week.
See, again, like,
yeah, death. Hey, listen, death is death. And Kate Middleton is dying. She got cancer. She's got now this incredible story to tell. Everybody's going to play out with her. We all ate humble pie and all that.
Will's perspective on Ricky Gervais. Right. Mm-hmm. And it shed some light on who he is and how he approaches life with his opinion of a very famous, like a world renowned comic. And so when he said he didn't like him, I'm like, okay, we're going to get a dose of why Will doesn't like Ricky Gervais. And so I don't feel bad about bringing up Ricky Gervais, and I don't feel bad about actually liking Ricky Gervais. I think that's the problem with the world that we live in right now, is there's too much thought going into a lot of this stuff, and everyone's too concerned about what everyone's going to think of you if you say this or that. Like, everyone has an opinion, and you're going to find your way and negotiate life based on how you view things, right? Like, this podcast is sort of a microcosm of that. I have had people tell me that being a part of this with you is going to jeopardize my future. And I'm like, you have, like, that's your opinion. Thank you. I'm going to continue to do this podcast with Dean. Right?
Yeah.
But I get told that on a fairly regular basis. What are you doing? You've aligned yourself with someone that, and I'm like, okay, that's my choice.
Yeah.
Dean and I have very similar values. Mm-hmm. We have good chemistry. Mm-hmm. And I don't always agree with him. And when he says something I don't agree with, I'm going to point it out. Right?
That's the problem that that's the entire problem with society today that we live in. You just touched on something absolutely fantastic. I will work with anybody. I don't care what that person says. If Jordan Peterson came up to me today and, you know, offered me some benzos and a Bible and said, I want to do a podcast with you, I'd say, fucking right.
Absolutely. Let's
do absolutely. It. I would love to know how you got to where you were. I would have millions of people on one side of the equation going, I can't believe you're talking to me. You don't get to control who I fucking talk to. You don't get to control what I say. You don't know what's in my mind about why I want to talk to that guy. They automatically assume that we're going to talk to somebody that someone else doesn't want you to talk to, that you're going to put some kind of something in the world that's going to hurt everybody. That's what everybody tells you. Or why are you aligning yourself with that person? Because that person did something 15 years ago that some people didn't like, and I didn't like it, so you shouldn't align yourself with that person. We live in the most fucked time in human history where people will stop talking to you because you liked a tweet from someone they don't talk to.
They
will change the course of their relationships because you befriended the wrong person on social media or because you talked to the wrong guy. David Parker, case in point, Take Back Alberta, vilified. I know him. I like him.
You don't have to agree with him politically.
Don't agree with almost anything he says politically. We align on two different things, right? We align on the fact that first principles need to be put into politics and we suck at it now. And we align on corruption in social order. We align on corruption, real corruption in politics, which is what we see on a daily basis. That's where we align and we get along and I like him and he thinks I'm crazy in some aspects. I think he's crazy in some aspects. But do you remember when people who thought each other were crazy could still play poker together and have a good time? I do. I remember that time.
I appreciate Will. After I bring up an artist that he does not like, appreciate
feeding it to you and staying on the podcast,
staying on the podcast and saying, well, you know what? That's where we part ways here. I disagree with that man completely and gave us a dose of why. And you know what? As soon as he said what he said about Ricky Gervais, you take a step back and go, okay, I can see how somebody would come at it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's what conversations are about. And the whole idea on social media, the whole idea in culture wars is to prevent people from having a conversation just in case the truth comes out on behalf of one side or another. And they want to create radicalized armies on the left and the right. It's woke versus unwoke. And I'm fucking so tired of it. So fucking tired of it. I'm starting a podcast with David Parker for that very reason. Just to stick my thumb in the eye of all of them. I don't give a fuck. I don't care about the left. I don't care about the right. I don't care about the performance. I don't care about the truth. What I care about is one thing, my ability and your ability to conduct business and conversations in a world where nobody wants you to because they think they're better than everybody else.
Fuck That's not you. Everybody. That's not
oh,
everybody.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's there, so there, many there, people today.
There so is a strong...
How many people when you started working with me said, I can't believe you're working with him. Are you going to put your... Yeah, he's a terrible person that never met me.
Most of them have an opinion of you based on something that they heard.
Correct. Or not heard, not read.
I will say this. There's not a lineup down the street of people. Dean. So
doesn't matter.
The Some odd person will say, come my way and go, what?
And, that, You're doing and I'll what? Tell you something. That person is useless to society. Useless.
What I generally say is, I don't think you know the Dean that I know, right? That's what I'll say. And I'm not going to get into defending you, right? Because it's you're basing a defense on something that this individual saw or heard, right? Second, third, fourth hand. So it's kind of a pointless conversation. I tried to get one person on. This was maybe a year ago, 6 months ago, something like that. I tried to get somebody on who, by the way, has a very interesting reputation in the world that we live in. And I'm not going to say the guy's name, but I remember saying, you got to come on the podcast with me. And he was like, Yeah, no, that's a bad idea. And it was so entertaining to me.
I know who you're talking about. It was someone whose reputation I wouldn't necessarily want on my podcast.
Well, that's just it. And I remember saying, okay, and I didn't even bother because it was so ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that's how you can tell people are stupid. Like, honest to God, someone that wants to prevent any conversation because they think it's bad for other people because it's bad for them is just a pussy. That's all they are. I could care less who they are. I don't care what anybody says, what anybody talks about. I really don't. I'm not.
That's why I can appreciate somebody like a Ricky Gervais or a Dave Chappelle.
Yeah.
Somebody that goes hard in the paint. I might not necessarily agree. And I mean, never repeat any of the things that they said.
Bingo.
But I think that's why I have an appreciation for that type of art.
Yeah.
Because. And there's another one that I'm really fond of that I think that I don't know if he gets the credit he deserves for being as saying some of the things he said. Tom Segura. Have you heard a lot of his comedy?
Oh, yeah. I love Tom Segura.
He's another one.
And I go like this with Tom Segura comedy sometimes.
Oh, I know.
I'm interested in the fallout. But the way he weaves
his way back,
yeah,
and still is kind of likable. Like I like that.
I do too.
And again, like I'm not judging Will for not liking Ricky Gervais, but for me, like when I see somebody that does that kind of content and goes that far with it, I'm always like, good for you, because there's very few people that can do that.
Well, and that's, you know, and that's really the danger, and I think that was what Will's talking about. You know, the Dave Chappelle's of the world can do it, and they want to do it to stick their thumb in the eye of people who say they can't. Same with Ricky Gervais. And you can call that heroic if you want. Some people do, some people don't. I don't have a problem.
Heroic.
Well, I don't have, some people do. Some people say that guy's not letting the man get to him. I think you have a bigger responsibility than what you can and can't say according to what might make you get canceled. It doesn't matter what you do. If it's in podcasting, comedy, doesn't matter. But those are my values. I don't port those on to Ricky Gervais.
No,
I don't port those on to Dave Chappelle. I enjoy their comedy, whether I agree or disagree with parts of it. That's where everybody needs to get to, because that's the conversation that we got to have. It's not about what people can and can't watch, because that person might be offended by what you're doing or what you enjoy, right? If that person is offended by what you're doing or what you stand for, that person's a pussy. That person doesn't have control or agency over their minds. And I don't care about those people. I really don't. But I conduct myself with appropriateness in the public square, so I don't have to worry about any of those things.
I think it needs to be taken one step further, because I think when you're in the space that we're in right now, like in this podcast world, and I'm talking about, you know, a hockey player from Edmonton getting into, you know, being a brony, and then all of a sudden we get news that Princess Kate might be, has cancer, right? I think there's also pressure on individuals as well to be comfortable with how they're perceived, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's the bigger part of this conversation, Dean.
Mm-hmm.
That. Like, let's say somebody said something about, like, maybe there was a rumor about Lachlan being into pegging, right?
Is that true?
It's not true. Because I better say that before you cut this clip out and send it out as micro content. Lach's into pegging. No, he's not. But I think it's how we handle that information. And I actually... That's part of my appreciation is probably the best way of saying it. Like, I have always appreciated how you've handled what's happened to you. And I know that it took you some time to get to that point, right? But what happened to you at the edge, if people know the real story, and then they know that how it was curated after the fact, mm-hmm. to hurt your career, mm-hmm. and how you've sort of moved past that and continued on, I have a great deal of respect for it.
Thanks, buddy. You don't really have a choice. What else are you going to do, right? You know, other people will try to affect your life negatively, like the Princess Kate stuff. People try to affect their lives like negatively. Your old boss who fired you tried to affect your life negatively. You have literally two choices, and I tell this to so many people. You can quit, or you can say, fuck it, and keep going, move forward. Like, there's really only one way to do that. But if you're not going to become a better person through that thing that was visited on you, if you're not going to take time to figure out how to manage your life a little better and get through this life a little bit better, then you're fucked, right? Yeah. And that's all that matters. Like, same, you know, and say what you like about the royal family. They don't say a word for 3 weeks. The world's coming for them, pegging, abortions, murder, affairs. Woman sits on a park bench. She goes, just want to let everybody know, thank you for the well wishes. I have cancer. I'll be back soon. Right? She just get on with it. Just, no, I'm not going to deal with any of that bullshit. I'm just going to get on with it. And everybody gets so caught up in trying to monitor and police the way other people are. Oh my God. It's fucking unbelievable. And sometimes just the truth, like that bullet of truth, shuts everybody else up. She's going to have detractors. I'll have detractors. Everybody's always going to have detractors. People are going to try and make your day worse just because they feel like shit about themselves. Right? That's what media is. That's why it exists. We can get caught up in it and we can have fun conversations with stuff like that. But bottom line is that if you're not a responsible person, you're going to suffer. It doesn't matter what it is. Comedy, conversations. If you're a dick and you're continually putting dickish things into the world, no matter what happens to you, you're never going to succeed. You're never going to be a happy person. You're never going to move forward. Right? Never, ever, ever, ever. This is what some people don't understand. And I wish I could communicate that to people a little bit clearly. I work with lots of people on this. And it's so frustrating because that's, I mean, a microcosm, a bigger problem with the world we have is you've got people on one side that are like, the world has made this terrible experience for me and I'm out to get the world and no one gets me and victim, victim, victim. And then on the other side, you've got people going, I don't know, fuck, the pandemic was 3 years ago. I'm just busy moving on with my life. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's interesting because we have this conversation quite often, you and I, about honesty and about truth. And see, this is a moment again, like this Kate thing is very, and listen, there's some circumstances as to why they held off. So I'm not judging them for that, but, there are so many stories that just, they become something they aren't based on our lack of ability to be honest with each other nowadays. Mm-hmm. And listen, the royal family is an exception to all the rules. So, I mean, it's hard to compare that, but you and I went back and forth countless times over that Corey Perry, Connor Bedard story. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well, no, and, not you and I went back and forth. You were wholly irresponsible with it, and I was trying to tell you to cool it. That's what happened.
Okay, no, hold on. Let's go back. Let's go back to that those original conversations. Remember, you kept telling me that there was no proof about any of the stories.
Yeah,
and you kept telling me that maybe we shouldn't touch on them, and I'm like, no, you're totally wrong. As long as we tell everybody that we have no idea whether this is true or not, I think we can still kind of negotiate the story. And you begrudgingly allowed me to talk about it because
I kind of agreed. Yeah, actually.
Yeah. So we did. And then we end up finding out what the real story was.
Yeah.
And all the pieces came together.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Everything, yeah. The whole story came together based on the truth.
Assholes, dude. That's my point, is that the world has just become a bunch of assholes. You were like, hey, if I speculate enough.
I so desperately wanted the story about him banging Connor's mom to be true.
I know you did.
And we did a month of content on it.
And dude, the poor kid's mom's traveling around the Americas. Everybody's thinking she's banging Corey Perry. She had to deactivate her Instagram account.
Totally screwed this poor woman's life up.
Yeah, way to go.
But hold on. Hold on. If they had just said what happened.
Well, there's a reason they couldn't. Same thing with Kate. Your big fucking mouth. You're like bang, 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 like everybody else because you can't help yourself because you're emotionally tagged in. Like nothing excites you more than a good rumor. I know that about you. you'll call me and go, you hear about this rumor? This great rumor. Connor Bedard, Corey Perry's mom. I'm like, dude, there's no way that's true. And you're like, it's true. I'm going with it. I'm getting shirts made and everything. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, we took the shirts down. You made me.
Yeah, I did. And he got fired like 2 weeks later. Maybe that's how to do it. I don't know.
I don't think it was the Connor Bedard story that got me fired. Musical See, but dildos? Hold on. There still could, there was a moment there where somebody in a room made a decision to say something that wasn't true, that the whole world was going to go, what? No. And I think I know the moment was when they were saying it out loud in a boardroom and they were making the decision. And the actual truth was just so stupid that they didn't want to say it out loud. Right? Look at the Otani story. At some point, somebody had to make a decision to lie to the world, and everybody in the planet goes, oh man, Otani's gambling on baseball. There's no way his managers. So this is the world that we live in now.
Yeah, I know. You only get half truths or no truths, and you're allowed to speculate, and you wouldn't speculate if someone would just come out, put a bullet in it. No matter how embarrassing it is, tell us.
Am I wrong? Hold on. Am I wrong? As crazy, you know the Corey Perry story now. You know what actually happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Am I wrong? If they had said
you got too drunk at a pizza,
you got drunk at a pizza joint and had somebody, a waitress, spank him with the pizza paddle.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
As stupid as that is, to me, that just takes all the air out of that story.
100%.
And it's over.
Yep.
It's over. Everyone moves on. Nope. They lie about it and it blows up. Right.
Well, plus they don't talk about it, which is a form of lying. It's just like, and then they'll allude to things to try to push like, yeah, fuck. Yeah, dude, it's psyops. It's crazy. We live in the stupidest time of all time. And now it's not like you get messaging only one of three ways like we did in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Now it's like this fucking fire hose of that. Boom, 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 boom. Anyway, I got to go. I'm done. You finished?
I'm done.
All right.
That was well a tough done. One today.
We ate some humble pie right in the middle of a fucking trying to laugh about the royal family. Peggy, she's got cancer. Oh, well. Can't believe people made that. That was a quick pivot. Can't believe people make fun of her. With the British guy who's crying.
See, I know what I should say. I know what I should say, but I'm in the same canoe as you.
Right? I know.
I should say you're going to hell, Dean.
Observationally.
But
he was laughing too. But think about that. We bring a British guy on the show. She's been missing for 3 months. The day she announces she has cancer, the British guy, who's fully human, tells us on the show that she's got cancer when we were going to make jokes about where she was. Prior to that, I'm like, hey, where's Princess Kate? He's like, I don't care. And all of a sudden, oh, I do care. Like, we're lucky. Found content. Have a great day, buddy. We'll see you on the Monday. Talk to you
soon. All right.
Lock and Cross brought to you by Ardent Roofing Systems. ArdentRoofSystems.com, by the way. Get a quote today. Stacey was on the podcast the other day. Greatest guy on the planet. Maybe the most trusted. Well, he is the most trusted roofer in the entire province of Alberta. In fact, he's the most trusted Owens Corning Platinum partner in North America. Won that award a couple days ago. That's the guy you got to call. Ardent Roofing. ArdentRoofSystems.com. Also brought to you by our friends at Fact Check. We want to make sure that we clean up the internet. And our friends at Fact Check have joined us for this journey. This is a team of scientists, team of data scientists, a team of computer scientists, team of psychologists and journalists that have put together some of the most robust software to defeat disinformation and to act as your guide through the journey of social media and news. Everybody gets lied to. People take narratives and torque them. This has the ability to actually score that sentiment so you can figure out whether or not you're being lied to. Pictures, videos, text, doesn't matter what it is, any URL, anything that says, hey, here's a claim, you can double check that. That's the way it works. Go to factcheck.io. Join their beta test team today. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? Also brought to you by our friends at Muse Massage Spa. And our lovely friends, Emily and Riley, are the hosts of the Muse on the Mic podcast. They operate the number one body shop parlor in the entire country of Canada, out of Toronto, Ontario, 1290 Finch Avenue West, Unit 13, Toronto, Ontario, musemassagespa.com. $50 off right now in a discreet experience. If you're looking for one, email the girls at musemassagespa.com. Tell them you want the Dean special. They know exactly what that is. It's just a cheaper experience, but a very discreet experience as well. And you can listen to their podcast on a daily basis. Muse Massage Spa has a podcast called Muse on the Mic. You can get it at Patreon. You can also get it at YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to it and follow the ladies as well. Special thank you and a shout out to our partners at Muse on the Mic. And of course, brought to you by Cantorque, the number one industrial tool maker in the country. They make rugged, hardworking torque wrenches. Canada's leading industrial tool experts for 20 years, unparalleled expertise. Colin and his group will make you anything you need for any application, any bolting solution on the planet. It's what they do. They've been doing it for 20 years for heavy industry, forestry, machinery around the world, nuclear power plants, boring tunnel machines, doesn't matter what it is. Colin makes the best equipment and the best industrial torque wrenches in the world right here in Canada. Proudly Canadian. Go to cantorque.com for more information. Have a great day, everybody. Appreciate you being part of the show. We will see you on Tuesday. See you next Tuesday. Remember that old chestnut? I sure do. See you next Tuesday, Locke. Bye.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast. Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.